This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here, live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. You hear the term social media celebrities and influencers, but what are they, and really, how can you become one? Director of Marketing at Qualcomm, Jessica Jensen, is here to explain it. Thanks for joining me, Jessica.
Yeah, you're welcome. Happy to be here.
Before we jump into it, could you tell me a little bit about yourself?
So my name is Jessica Jensen, and I'm the Director of Global Marketing at Qualcomm. My responsibilities specifically in marketing include all of our corporate social media, our executive social media, and then also our social influencer program.
Have you been in marketing a long time?
I have, yeah. I've been in marketing for about 18 years in total. It's a little break in the middle to get my MBA. Prior to Qualcomm, I was at Microsoft, so also in the tech industry. And then prior to that, I was in marketing, but not in the tech industry. So I worked for Adidas for a period of time in digital marketing, and then Nestle as a brand marketer.
So I'm really glad you have all this experience, because you can actually, you've lived through the transition from traditional marketing to social media marketing. Was that like a big jump, or was this like easy stuff to get into?
No, it's just an interesting time to be a marketer. Definitely when I started, it was more in the traditional world. So print ads and out of home and broadcast, even radio. Really, it was probably in my Nestle days, which was the mid-2000s, like 2005, 2007, where it began to transition to digital. And at that point, digital consisted of, you know, email newsletters and obviously the web, of course, having a website. And I had done web work before that, but email newsletters was probably the first, call it, relationship marketing tool. So that was still very early days, though. There was not any social media, and YouTube wasn't a thing. So I think Adidas was my first chapter where my full-time job was digital marketing. It wasn't just a piece of it like it was at Nestle. And also where social media began to really take hold. And it was so casual and so kind of off the corner of our desk. I mean, I remember sitting there with our intern and creating the Facebook page. And it was just sort of a whim. Like, our boss just said, hey, why don't we check this out? Why don't you guys try creating a Facebook page and see what happens? And we had no editorial calendar. There was, you know, paid media wasn't even a thing back then. So it was actually really cool to be the age that I was and where I was in my career, because I got to grow up as a marketer as digital marketing and social media marketing really were also growing up and coming to fruition. So I was able to make some mistakes and kind of learn along the way without having, you know, a ton of concern about doing it wrong. So I was fortunate that way.
That's actually really cool, because if you think about it, you guys, it went from just going from advertisement and magazines, which is so simple, to all of a sudden it's like, oh man, we're actually interacting with our audience. How did the growth happen? Like, because you imagine big conglomerates, they're able to have like hundreds of millions of people, and suddenly it seems like almost like a grassroots effort when it comes to social media.
Yeah, I mean, again, back then, you know, with the term we use now, organic reach, you know, the notion of being able to put things out on social media and have them actually reach your audience without any paid media or dollars behind it was really healthy, right? Because, again, there was not a lot of brands doing it. No one was very big yet. Social media was still in its infancy. And so you could absolutely put content out there. And most of it back then was text-based or an image. The really video content was not at the forefront, and largely that was just due to the ability for us to stream content the way we can today. We couldn't back then. And so this, you know, even just text and visuals, you could get responses and reactions from your audience right away. And you know, this is, again, when I was at Adidas, which is a very consumer-facing brand. I worked in the lifestyle division, so you probably are familiar with, like, Adidas Originals and Stella McCartney and some of the Run DMC from back in the day. All that was sort of in my wheelhouse, and there's a lot of passion around that lifestyle kind of fashion-forward side of athletic footwear and apparel. So we would get lots of comments and we'd have lots of great conversations directly with our consumer. And so in some ways it was almost like a market research tool, you know, certainly not statistically significant or, you know, using all the right standards and parameters you would with real research, but you could throw ideas out there and get feedback on product designs or colorways or even musical, you know, musicians that you were considering partnering with right away, which was awesome.
You know, when you were talking about people you would consider, it's almost like, well, in the beginning it was A-list celebrities, like you said, musicians, but now you have like the Joe Blow next door. And does that affect marketing now?
I mean, that's a great transition. I think that's really, when you want to sort of dig into the topic of social media influencers, that's really the big evolution is there's always been influential personalities. And, you know, again, even 10 years ago, those were largely celebrities. And they, in the world of Adidas, they might have been musicians or athletes. You know, obviously each industry has different luminaries and celebrities. And then before that, you know, even before digital, certainly celebrities were incorporated into traditional advertising to be spokespeople and paid advocates. But I think that's the biggest change in the last decade is because of YouTube, because of Twitter, Instagram, social media has allowed for non-celebrities to build channels and distribute content that they've made themselves. And so that this is really where the blossoming of social media influencers has come from, is because of having these platforms to distribute content. And then even more recently, the ability to shoot such high quality video from our phones even and stream it so readily. It's changed the game. It's flipped it on its head.
One of the things I get a little confused about, and a lot of it's buzzwords too, what's the difference between like a social media influencer and a brand ambassador? Because you hear that a lot.
And I agree with you. Some of this does get to be kind of buzzwordy and kind of nomenclature. I mean, there's definitely no black and white definition of a brand ambassador. If I had to try to delineate the difference between those two, I would say brand ambassador is a more generic macro term. You can have an employee of a company be a brand ambassador simply because, you know, they're in corporate communications or they're an executive or they just have a great personality that is public facing. I often hear the term brand ambassador used when again, consumer-facing brands especially might hire, say, a, quote, street team. So, for example, I have a girlfriend who's in marketing for Diageo, which owns a number of liquor brands. And you can imagine when they are trying to market and sell a certain brand of liquor, they would hire a street team of people to go out to bars and give, you know, samples or, you know, talk about this new liquor. And so these folks often are called brand ambassadors. They usually are trained at a baseline level about the brand and the company, and they're usually given some sort of script. And they're often deployed for kind of moments in time, so certain events or event-based activation. But I think it's a pretty broad term. It can kind of mean lots of different things. Compared to a social media influencer, which I think is a much more specific term, and this is really someone who has developed an online personality of their own. They have an audience that they've really cultivated, and they have their own ability to create content, and again, just as important, to distribute it to their audience. So they're much more self-contained, I believe, and it's a much more curated personality that you're partnering with.
Well, I'm glad you explained it. That makes a lot of sense. When it comes to social media influencers, though, I can't help but think of the most recent thing with Logan Paul when he went to Japan and, you know, the suicide forest, and he kind of made fun of it, which is not something someone should do, obviously. He lost a few sponsors and he got, you know, I think his other stuff happened to him. But anyways, at what point does a marketing company sit there and say, you know what, we don't want to align ourselves with certain social media influencers? I mean, does that happen? Or is it just, well, he's got, you know, 10 million followers, let's jump on it?
I think there's always been this risk. Again, we go back to the days before social media or even before digital was common and really core to marketing, when there was just partnerships with celebrities. And again, they could have been in a TV commercial. there's been loads of examples where folks have done things they shouldn't have done. You know, there was a famous example with Kanye West a couple years ago about his Twitter rants and then deleting them. And, you know, we've seen obviously many examples of athletes over the years doing things that they shouldn't have done in their personal lives. So I think there's always that risk of when you partner with a personality, whether it's all the way up to a celebrity or a kind of up-and-comer social influencer, that they may do something that's not in alignment with your brand personality or your belief system. And I think that's just the risk that you take when you partner with a human. Humans are imperfect. And obviously you want to have a lot of those conversations up front. Hey, this is what we stand for. It looks like from all the content I've seen and the stuff you've done in the past, we're in alignment. We have some shared values. But there's still always that percentage chance that someone can just make a bad decision or post something in a time of weakness. And you know, you just have to, I think, at that point, really rely on the relationship and decide, is this someone that we can repair and continue forward with? Or is it really kind of a deal breaker for future partnerships?
When you're looking at someone who you would consider to be a social media influencer, what do you look for exactly?
Great question. I get asked this question a lot internally. So the program I've built here at Qualcomm, obviously the influencers we're working with are tech enthusiasts. They are savvy, very savvy in the technology industry, specifically mobile tech, right? Because that's where everything's headed anyway. And so I definitely, number one, look for expertise. I want them to be smart and savvy and, you know, forward thinking around the technology industry. And ideally, it extends beyond mobile, extends into things like the Internet of Things. So that might be like, you know, smart thermostats, you know, wearable smart watches, all the things that are starting to light up the Echo with voice activation. So I'm looking for them to be smart and savvy in the industry that I care about, which is the tech industry. So that's number one. Number two, I definitely look for them to have a sizable following. And, you know, honestly, a sizable following could start at somewhere around 10 to 20,000 followers or subscribers. There's no magic number. There's always the quality versus the quantity discussion. I mean, someone could have millions of subscribers or followers and, you know, they could largely be garbage or bots. But generally speaking, you can tell if they've got, you know, in the thousands or even, you know, nudging 100,000 subscribers, followers, as well as an engaged audience, then that usually indicates that those are quality folks. And when I say engaged, I mean that they're getting a lot of comments and questions on their Twitter handle or underneath their YouTube videos. I see that they're responding to them. They're going back and forth and having good dialogue with those people. So a healthy sized audience, but also an engaged audience is important to me. And then the last thing for me is very qualitative. And it's really around their personality. And so, for example, when I started this program, we identified, with the help of some folks in product marketing, some of the folks that we thought were good candidates. And I just set up one-on-one phone calls with each of them and just kind of had a half an hour chat. And I'd ask them how they got started. I'd ask them, you know, what was your job before you did this? What do you love about technology? What do you know about Qualcomm? And I would just sort of, it's almost like a first date, you know, you just sort of kind of get to feel out the way that they speak, how articulate they are. Do they seem warm and personable? Because ultimately you want to work with good people. And so that personality piece, that charm and that chemistry is definitely a factor.
Do you guys ever give like media training? Because I imagine working with someone who hasn't been in this type of business before, they may not know how to conduct themselves in interviews or in public.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. We haven't done media training with our social influencers. You know, I have to say, a lot of these guys, while they don't have formal marketing backgrounds or formal PR training, and some of them haven't even finished college, they are in front of the camera all the time. You know, they are making videos constantly. They are traveling in circles or throughout the tech industry, all of the major trade shows, all the events where they're with other tech brands, with other social influencers. And these guys have, I mean, they may have sort of learned it through non-traditional methods, but they have definitely become very savvy and seem to have a fair amount of common sense about what's appropriate and really what's professional, because they also want these brand partnerships to last. They want, you know, they want us to be happy. They want to be authentic, number one, to their audience. That's number one. But they want to, they want the partnership to be reciprocal and good and positive, because, you know, they're obviously, you know, their income, part of their income can depend on making sure that everyone's feeling good about things. So they're more savvy than one might expect.
When it comes to someone who's like listening and they're like, man, I think my stuff is like A grade. I think it's wonderful, but I can't get over that cusp. What would you recommend?
You start looking at, okay, who are the guys that I aspire to be like? You know, and you might, again, just filter simply by subscriber or follower count, just to start. But then you start watching their stuff and you see a lot of commonality. You see, again, an authentic personality. You see a clear point of view about different products and brands. You see usually a lot of energy and positivity. And then you get into logistical things like what's the length of their videos? You know, are they doing 4, 5, 6 minute videos on YouTube and then they're doing a social cut down of 30 or 60 seconds for Twitter? Okay, well, if that seems to be a best practice, maybe I should be doing that. Are they following and engaging with each other? That's something that I discovered early on. I was worried that when I started talking to these guys that they might be competitive, right? Because they're talking to a lot of the same audiences. So they're in some ways competing for attention from the tech enthusiast audience. But what I discovered is that most of them follow each other, subscribe to each other's channels, and you'll even see them having tons of online conversation with each other. So it's kind of a really cool community that's been built, at least in the tech industry. I'll speak to that. And so if I'm someone who wants to kind of come into that world, first thing I'm going to do is start following and engaging with all the guys that I look up to and try to get them to help proliferate the content that I make and engage with it, because that's going to get me some reach.
Well, thank you so much, Jessica, for joining me. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Thanks for asking. Yeah, so I'm on Twitter. My Twitter handle is JKBJensen, and I'm pretty active there, so I'd love to have you follow me on Twitter.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MASONVERAPAINE.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.